Welcome to Generation Now, the show by and for millennials and Gen Z. I'm your host, Troy McDonald. When my guests today were last on the show, we were in the midst of a global pandemic that had claimed at that time around 100,000 lives, according to the CDC. And the year was just beginning. Just a week after our show aired, the show aired, George Floyd's death led people to the streets in anger and frustration. In January, we saw an insurrection of our nation's capital, which almost brought democracy to its knees. And as of now, around 600,000 people have died from COVID-19. It's been a year that has fundamentally changed our world. And to kind of put it all into perspective and hopefully bring some clarity to our new world, hopefully that can be come from what has happened, I'm pleased to welcome my guests back today. Please welcome Nicole Gustafson and Katie Laurie, student support counselors from Gateway Technical College. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Happy to be here.
So we are here. I'm queer and I survived. I mean, just like a victory, like hallelujah moment, like up top, like holy, I mean, just, okay. I couldn't have predicted how much the world would have changed just a week after our conversation aired in 2020.
Yeah.
Yeah. Listening to you list that all off, Troy, man, I got like goosebumps, right? Because we couldn't have guessed. And it's like, if we were throwing darts at topics that can happen in a year, we like landed the bullseye on a whole bunch of them. And it's a lot. It's a lot of different things. It's intense.
And it's so truthfully so long overdue in so many ways that we would bring the tensions to the surface in the way that they've been brought by our society and in unfortunately such cruel and horrible ways. But I would like to think that from this, we rise together. But I don't know if that's what happens yet. That's still like the million-dollar question. Are we going to be a better version of ourselves as humans, or are we going to continue to stay in a struggle that we have perpetuated for a really long time with a lot of the inequalities and a lot of the notions of what or how something is supposed to be based on a very subjective experience. So I'd like to be really hopeful. And Katie reminds me often of the importance of hope. So.
Right.
She backs up me too. Sorry. Go ahead, Troy.
No, you're right. Like hope is so important. And after that happened last year, the George Floyd death and the subsequent protests, people were asked, are you surprised by this? I said, no, I really wasn't. Yeah. Because when I moved to Kenosha in 2004, I lived kind of in the Lincoln Park neighborhood and went to Lincoln Park or Lincoln Middle School. And I knew that how the community thought about me by the way the streets weren't paved, by the way our garbage wasn't picked up regularly, mm-hmm, by the way the conditions of the neighborhood told me how I should feel about myself. And if it wasn't for my mother, I would have stayed in that belief system. So I wasn't surprised that it came to the surface. But you're right. That is the million-dollar question. How will we address those inequities? We ended our conversation last year on a positive note. I believe it was you, Katie, that said that we have to believe that people are fundamentally good. This year, like, has tried that. have you modified that? Have you rethought that notion?
I think sometimes I don't have time to reset it because we're living in the midst of it, and it's. I feel like. We're managing it. We're managing the reactions and like not knowing what comes next. And so I don't know that I spend a lot of time reframing it. But Troy, I'm really glad you reminded me that I said that because that is, I think, always going to be my baseline, even though you're right. It was really trying. And I think everybody listening is probably like, I'm making like a list. So I hope they're doing that too. Like, what were times that really tried me? What were people who posted some things on social media where I was like, man, I thought that I loved you, but now I'm struggling about whether I can see that your intention is good in spite of us not agreeing on this topic. It just, and that's like a small thing, right? And then you get to like your bigger things, some of the bigger events that were held, you know, concerts that happened when we were still in lockdown and things like that. It's a struggle. It is. And so I want to say yes. I want to say yes. I want to say I try is maybe, but the most accurate way to come at that.
Well, and Katie, I want to piggyback off of something you said, because it's such a great point. And we as clinicians think about this all the time. What is someone's intention? Like, what are they actually intending to do with their action or their behavior? So like, what is their motivation for what they're doing? And what's the intended outcome? So if I'm unkind or insensitive, and I just, because I'm just maybe not aware, or perhaps I'm uneducated about something, well then, you know, that's really different than if I am setting out to create fires in the world, whether it's verbally or literally, to cause harm and damage to other people and their way of living. So I think, to Katie's point, it's worth considering what someone is actually intending to do. And again, where they're operating from, because there is room for grace and there is room for compassion. But it is a little bit harder to muster when someone, you know, someone's operating in a place that's fueled and governed by something that looks like anger and retaliation and hatred and bigotry. And so I really urge us to come from a place of understanding, but to also recognize that we get to have, you know, real firm personal boundaries when those boundaries are crossed.
You know, Nicole, when I think about what you said, I mean, intention, right? Of course, that is what we spend a ton of time talking about in our therapy sessions, like trying to create some grace and some compassion for people. And sometimes not, right? Sometimes you're like, listen, you were a kid and your parents were terrible, so you can just go ahead and own that. But I'm thinking about how humanity really showed us that a ton of people felt threatened, right or wrong. I mean, I don't mean to say that anyone should feel wrong about how, whether they felt threatened or not, but based on what you listed, right? Like education and awareness and understanding. And so without that, people felt threatened. And then that was the response that we saw. And did the pandemic, the beginning of all of this, create the perfect atmosphere for all of us to feel like something was being threatened? My health, my liberties, my ability to do what I wanted to do. My worry that my grandma was going to die if she hugged the wrong person at Christmas. Like, so many things felt threatened across the board. And then that just unraveled and that got louder and louder and louder. And some of the things you listed, Troy, really were like the outcome of that. And some of it is good. You know, Nicole, like you said, like we've waited a long time for this to kind of boil over. So hopefully something good will come of the boiling over.
Yeah.
I saw a lot of people's true colors.
Like pressure cooker situation, you know? Yeah. And we just kept trying to, like, we kept turning the heat up and then we were surprised by the results of this. So like human resilience is a thing. It's a beautiful thing. And, but there's limits to everything. So, yeah.
And Nicole, I want to touch on that because, and I know that there's a lot of young people who are feeling this. What are the limits to that grace? Right, you mentioned personal boundaries. How do you make that determination and say, you know what, I've given you all the energy that I can. I've given you the time and the space to accept me, my lifestyle, especially as a member of the LGBTQ community. I've had to deal with that a lot. So when is enough grace to give? When is there enough grace to give?
Oh yeah, let's start with saying Happy Pride Month for sure. I think, Troy, that's a great question. And that really to me evokes something deeply personal for everybody. So I tend to be a clinician and a human who tries to operate from a place of like offering compassion and like trying to understand. And so when someone is just really unkind, I think to myself, like, that's a really unhappy person. Like, why would you feel the need to come at someone for XYZ, you know, whatever it is? Why is that even a thing? And that for me causes me to feel compassion, ironically, not for the person who's being victimized. I mean, I do, I definitely do, but I feel compassion for like, what happened to this person that they have become such a bully or such a, I don't know, elitist or such a, like, well, my way's the right way kind of person, and would trample on others in the process to feel somehow better about themselves. And so for me, I really try to offer compassion to all. And like, I think sometimes of this meditation, it's called metta meditation or loving kindness. It's like, we all as humans, we all probably want some of the same things. We all want to feel understood and feel connected and feel loved and feel safe and feel secure. But somewhere along the lines, how that manifests for people really starts to look different. And I think a lot of that comes back to some of that foundational rooting, whether, you know, we've got supports in our corner or not, or people who are going to care for us or protect us, really getting back to like when we were kids, you know, like, is the world a safe place or is the world a scary place? If I try something new, is it going to be okay? But to your question of boundaries, you know, or when enough is enough or when grace can be offered, again, I think like personal safety, absolutely paramount. If someone is threatening that, there is no need for grace. Like, you got to figure out what is going to keep you safe. And sometimes that applies to emotional safety. Like, it doesn't just have to be someone's coming at me with something. It's, are you weaponizing your words in such a way that your goal is to really inflict pain upon me or people I care about? In which case, I think that you can be very, and I've seen this a lot, especially with youth. And I just said yesterday in a meeting that the younger generation gives me so much hope for our future. I think we're going to be so much better off as we continue to grow and age our younger generation. I'm very excited about that. But I think that, you know, we get to create a space for people to say like, I don't want to give energy to this because this isn't safe for me. It's not appropriate. It's a waste of my time. And frankly, to feel okay to do that, to give people permission to go ahead and find their level of advocacy for themselves and for others to speak up. Again, yeah, safeguarding themselves emotionally.
What an aha moment, because I remember being in kindergarten and the major thing that they would tell us is look out for the stranger who's across the street. The physical safety is what was spent, what they spent so much time talking to us about. Yeah. And the emotional safety is just as important. I have goosebumps hearing that. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, we don't talk about it enough. And ironically, it's sort of the old phrase, sticks and stones can hurt. What is it?
Break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Yeah.
And I think it's the opposite. I'm like, wow, like you throw a stick at me and that's, that's a real drag. But like, if you want to hurt me as a human in the way that you want to crush my spirit or challenge my identity or whatever you want to, you know, like that stuff stays with us. I mean, Katie, how many times do we sit with people and their wounds are old? I mean, their wounds are related to really unkind behaviors that they experienced and maybe they thought were okay and they didn't realize until they started talking, like, wow, do you know that you had, you know, you suffered some trauma, or the people, you know, who meant to cause you harm are actually being really abusive to you. So
you can't know what you don't know.
Exactly.
You know, like swinging back to the boundary thing, something that you talked about, Nicole, was like feeling threatened and safety, right? And of course, we should be able to create boundaries and say no thank you to these things. But our reaction to them is what played out this year, because so many things threatened people's safety, whether that, again, you know, back to that whole like, I feel unsafe because you're telling me my kids can't go to school. Well, I'm feeling unsafe because I think you're going to pass around this virus that may kill somebody. I'm feeling unsafe because I'm finally explaining to you, like, I am unsafe, right? Based on who I am and where I live and what I look like. And like, I'm getting a chance to say that. And you're telling me that's all bogus. Well, that feels unsafe. Well, I'm feeling unsafe because you might be stepping on my privilege. Like, whether people acknowledge that that was at the, like, the baseline, and then our reactions to it. What if more people had just set boundaries, or had we come too far and we needed to react and interact about it? And I think it's both. You know, you said the word, like, how much energy am I going to give to something? Well, it kind of depends on like, how on the line am I? back to like the idea of that privilege. You know, I don't watch the news. Sometimes I feel like maybe I'm being irresponsible in that way, right? Mm-hmm. My dad starts telling me stuff and I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. You need to start at the beginning of the story, right? Like there's a hippo somewhere doing something. Okay. But like, am I privileged enough to not be able to watch the news? And is that not a threat to me? And then like our reaction to that. So it was intense. But Troy, to your point, like if we have the opportunity to say, I'm now setting a line, right? Whether it's small, like with my friends or my family, or with like how much time I'm going to spend researching QAnon, right? Like whatever that is, to do some self-care, to make ourselves safe, to take a break from social media, to be like, I love protesting, but I'm going to skip this one because this is what I need.
I love that phrase. How on the line am I? And I grew up knowing that I was on the line, or my people were on the line. My grandfather was a Pullman porter, had to wear gloves to serve white people on the trains. Mm. My mother was, and I shared the story on the air last year, she was in Texas 20 years before I was even thought of, with a friend in her 20s. They poured wine on her and said, N-word, go home.
Wow.
And 20 years later, she has to sit down with me mm-hmm. and try to somehow instill in me confidence to be all that I have become. I don't know how she did it, because that is such a crushing experience to go through. So, and then when I moved to Kenosha, as I said earlier in the program, the neighborhood that I lived in taught me about how I should feel about myself. So I knew how much I was on the line and how mm-hmm. I couldn't take my foot off people's necks, as they say in my community, right? Right. Like I had to keep pushing through to be my authentic self. Great, excellent points. It looks like
can we give a yeah. shout out to your mom, Troy?
Because yeah.
I think she's got to be everything. Like you are amazing and she has made you this person, and she's gone through what she went through. And, you know, I was listening to something this morning that was talking about all of the experiences that you've had in life have prepared you for this moment. And how do you want to arrive at this moment? So shout out to your mom, because I mean, mm-hmm. that's it's taking something so tragic and making something really, frankly, beautiful out of it, because she could have been a very soured, bitter woman. A lot of people are, and they have great reason for it. So anyway, just, she seems great.
You're right. And, you know, when I was a little boy putting on my blankie, as I called it, to put my hair in the style of Mariah Carey at her 1998 Divas Live special.
That's so good.
My mother did not like say, oh, like, what are you doing? Like, don't, she said, what are you today? I said, I'm Mariah Carey today. And she was so supportive. And in the Black community, that was shocking, right? And it still is. There are still issues there, even though it is changing and evolving, but I never felt any different. And again, right, shout out to mom, and I know she's listening, love you very much. So we're coming out, well, hopefully we're coming out of the pandemic, right? Mass mandates have been lifted. Some people are having a hard time really adjusting to life without the mask and life without the restrictions. People grieve during the pandemic, and now they're grieving coming out of it. How should we address that?
Oh, Nicole's
like, we don't. What's the next question?
No, I'm just thinking, I had an experience where, like, here's the deal. Like the individual and the collective, they're not, in this way, they're not entirely separate.
Right.
And we don't operate in, it's more of a Venn diagram. We don't operate in, you know, these spheres, we operate in this overlap. And so what I do does matter to what, you know, Katie does or you do, you know, like we're still in something that there's a ripple effect for everybody. And I'm reminded of a time recently where I was around folks and they, you know, there was a mask order. I mean, it was required, and these two women chose not to wear them. And we were on an airplane. So like nobody was getting out of that thing. And so when we got off the airplane, I just said as kindly as I could, you know, y'all need to wear your masks on the plane. And the woman looked at me and she had a look and she was whatever, not happy that I said that. And she said, mind your own business. And I said, well, the thing is, it actually is my business. And it's everyone else's business too. So I was kind about it, but I stand by what I said, because I think that what people do is not, again, it's not in a vacuum. And so people can only practice, I mean, we're only the boss of ourselves. We can only control ourselves. So I think ultimately, like, what makes someone feel safe and what makes someone feel comfortable, you know, Katie and I talk about this a lot, is really subjective. And so trying to figure out what that balance is to reintegrate or to still stay a little bit in what might feel safer in their own bubbles. So
Nicole set a boundary with those women. Sorry.
Right. No. I'm sorry for interrupting again. It's like, that is such an important point about the like you said, it's not happening in a vacuum. We saw over the last year cases where people would go to birthday parties and then there'd be 2,000-3,000 cases from a 50 person birthday party, right? Just from interacting in the community. So that was a very real thing. It did not happen in a vacuum.
Maybe just the reminder that nothing really does. I mean, this is such a tangible, loud reminder that, like, we really do affect each other in lots of ways. But that is difficult. And this comes back to something I think we talked about last time, is like saving space for people to do what their needs are. You know, I think that there's still a lot of conversations within, like, if my children are invited somewhere or my friends and I are going to do something, maybe it's just a gathering, like, okay, like, how do you feel? Like, you know, we're texting back and forth. Is it okay? They're going to play outside. They're going to be outside the whole time. Or is it okay? Like, they really want to come inside and play video games. Like, how do you feel about that? There's still a lot of this touching base and feeling it out. And I think that's excellent because it shows a great deal of respect and it allows people to have the space to speak that truth, right? Like, nope, like, we're not, for whatever reason. Like, maybe my partner is sick at home and has like cancer, but that's maybe not something I've disclosed or need to. We can still talk about this. Like, my kids can't come inside your house, but I'd love for them to play outside, right? So this continual mutual conversation of potential respect. And then when you're put in a situation, Nicole, like you described, it really feels like it takes the power out of that conversation. And maybe they had a reason. Maybe they had a great reason. You know, like they had a doctor's note or whatever. Like, are we, you know, do we post it? I would feel so responsible, right? I'd be like, I'm going to need to make an announcement.
Right? Well, I mean, but I love how you're highlighting the notion of communication, like respectful communication. Oh mm-hmm. my gosh, couldn't we get so much more done and so much more accomplished as a people if we could just respectfully communicate and try to operate from a place of seeking to understand? Because there are things that people have their own experiences that we have no idea what it's been like or felt like, and we don't know what situations they're considering. And like, if you don't ask the questions, you won't know. And then we get stuck in the land of making assumptions. And then we start to get, you know, sometimes perceptions get yucky, formed around assumptions. And then we get ourselves in a stuck place. So I love how you highlighted, Katie, like the importance of, you know, just asking, you know, some just personal safety questions. I am reminded a lot that this kind that, you know, like, and Katie and I have talked about this over the past year, like, it's now kind of like you're taking someone's, like, you know, sexual history. You're like, okay, well, right. Who have you been with? Just so I know, because, you know, I just need to know, like, how am I protecting myself and how have you protected yourself? I mean, this is like, this is the time where this has shifted. So
if you went to a birthday party,
right?
Where it's like, you all are inside. Listen, our school district got a letter from our superintendent and like, was like, look, folks, like, this is on you. Like, stop having birthday parties. He listed that. Stop having birthday parties. And I was like, wow. Oh man, we are being held accountable. As we should be.
Yeah.
Right. Speaking of school districts, this is like the worst segue ever, but Gateway has made a real effort.
You did it though, but you did it.
I did it. Gateway has made a real effort to be inclusive this year. This is Pride Month and they did a drag show a couple years ago. So could you talk about how Gateway has evolved, not only through the pandemic, but just being more inclusive as a community and what you've seen in your roles?
Absolutely. There's probably a lot to highlight there. But to your point, Troy, about like if I can just take the subject that you took, right? So it's Pride Month, and well, when did I start? Like 6 years ago when I first got there, we didn't
2014. You are like you are the absolute spearheader of this, and I thank you for it.
I was like, what do you mean we don't have a Rainbow Alliance? And so some students had said the same thing and we kind of got started. We've hosted like a Pride prom, right? We really like opened that up to the community. And Troy, like you mentioned, we had a really successful drag show that we would have continued to have if we hadn't had the pandemic, maybe someday again. But something else that was kind of an uphill battle that we got to was students being able to use their preferred name. So on like the class roster, so they don't have to like come to class and they'd be like, Roberts, and they're like, so it's Sherry, right? And so now that's listed as who that is. And so I think that some of the initiatives to really support our students, make things easier for them, and not just maybe in the LGBT community, but across the board, right? Our programming is about all kinds of things, all kinds of students, all kinds of diversity. It's DEI, like we said. So that everybody can kind of see a piece of something that they might relate to. And I think that that may not be our actual like mantra about that or our mission statement, but I think that is the hope that everybody can see something that they can relate to so that they feel more comfortable.
Right. That is so important. As you have talked about, you two work together and you work with students. Has there been something that's changed over the last year in the conversations you're having with students? Is it a lot more of the same, or has there been a real shift over the last year that in those conversations you've had with students?
Some of them found out that online learning was everything. Right? They're like, I don't have to find daycare. My kids are whatever. My life just got a lot easier. Some of them found out like, nope, like online learning is not for me. I'm talking to students who are like sitting in parking lots on like Wi-Fi, right? And so there was some like things that were made loud that people had to understand about their learning or about the amount of support they needed or didn't need, right? They need support to have somebody watch their kids when they have to come in person versus like, I don't need that support. So like, really like on each side of our lifestyle, we learned some things. And then, you know, no one gets out of this COVID cocoon without change. And like, how did that make us different, stronger, more beautiful? Obviously, we all got more beautiful, leggings and sweaters.
Well, and I think too, I mean, the adrenal fatigue, the just levels of cortisol with the living in a way, such a way that we have really just sort of this constant stress, this constant like looming of something over us. And I have talked with students of like younger, older, whatever. And some of them really are just kind of living life, you know, as they have in a lot of ways. And others are really have really like adjusted differently to the pandemic. And now are for those folks, the reintroduction into, I mean, I don't know that we're, I don't think we're the same ever. You know, I think that we all get to decide how we are going to show up to this really dynamic situation and this personal evolution. But for some folks now, the conversation, as you mentioned earlier, Troy, is like, okay, like how do I do life now? For the folks who really had, you know, had a different reaction as opposed to the folks who felt a little bit more comfortable kind of still going about life as they could. So there's all sorts of different levels of adjustment, but we cannot deny that we as a people, for a variety of different reasons, have really been tested and we've really been put through, you know, like the trauma ringer, and that changes people and your brain isn't even going to be the same after that. And the levels of exposure obviously vary. But you know, like this is where we get back to like, wow, we if not now, then like when, because we really need to be kind to ourselves and we need to try to be kind to others again, within reason, you know, finding those boundaries for the folks who are really, who are unsafe and trying to practice kindness for ourselves when that happens, and trying to offer kindness to others, because this is really unprecedented. And nobody is probably good at this because nobody's had to be good at this. And now we as people get to decide what happens next. And that's on all of us.
Wow. And believe it or not, we are out of time. This just flew by. And I think that is the perfect way to end, though, is that we get that energy, we have that space to determine what is next.